Speaking of the future.
Okay.
George Jetson.
Was born
a couple weeks ago.
Oh, happy birthday, George. Yeah. Welcome to the world.
Yeah, according to the Jetsons timeline.
Okay. Yeah. So we are moments away.
You're right.
The robot maid is what we all want.
Exactly.
Sure.
That's
I take a Rosie to pick up my stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Roomba, but I want, like, it's kind of useless. I want the next thing.
My Roomba doesn't talk to me. Doesn't, like, tell me about my day. And,
I do not need my robot maid to talk to me. I need my robot maid to clean up my stuff. I'm not looking for a companion. All right. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Patrick Nazareth. We're exploring the Take Our Faith Beyond Sunday morning. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
You didn't follow Patrick's lead. Patrick was giving us a very enunciated.
It's a new year, new intro. I'm bringing some new energy to
what
this
pod. What else am I supposed to say? I'm not successful.
You don't have to say, new things. You just have to say it in a new way.
Yeah.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Or
who's surprised?
This is my year. Name it and claim it.
No,
here no, no,
go.
No, no, no.
I did
no.
that with 2020.
2022, we're going in nice and easy, folks.
Don't
everybody
scare
just
it.
Take it down a notch.
I'm going to own it. I don't care what you say.
Okay, well, when it goes south, we're all coming for Patrick. Yeah, yeah, we all know.
Yeah. I'm willing to put the weight on my shoulders. I'm going to own this year.
You go for it, man. Okay. You do you.
Trial by fire.
All right. Well, we have, this is like a few weeks now. I'm not in a row, but like we have a treat in studio.
Yeah. We should do this more often.
Really, I know. Should,
it's
yeah.
been great.
Yeah. We did
listeners.
We did have Chinese food once in studio that we ate. So.
We did not record that portion of it.
Yeah. You're probably
you were still
much to
something.
The chagrin because you like to chew while we record.
I do not like to. I chewed one time. Anyway.
All right. But Elise, as a throwback to a previous episode, has brought in a treat this time.
All right.
We've got Pop-Tarts with cheese.
Yes. Brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts.
Heated up.
Lightly toasted with a thin slice of sharp cheddar cheese on top.
I'm excited about
does
it.
Does thin matter?
I like adventures.
Thin does matter.
Oh, yeah.
The
you don't want to overwhelm
cheese,
it.
Cheese, very important. Yep.
Then does it have to be cheddar?
It has to be sharp cheddar.
Sharp. None of this medium stuff.
Yeah. I actually did extra sharp cheddar today.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah. And ouch. Does it have to be brown sugar cinnamon? Like, you're like, I like strawberry.
That's how I do it. I've never tried it with any other type.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, we're gonna.
You can remix it.
Well, we'll try this. And we'll give our reviews here. So I'm going to go ahead and pause as we try. And we're back. All right. What did we think about the brown sugar cinnamon with sharp cheddar cheese?
Did not hate it.
Yeah. I thought it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, I'm at a point where I'm like, I'm not going to seek this out and think at 3 a.m, I want a Pop-Tart with some cheddar cheese on it. But if I'm at Elisa's house and she's like, hey, you want a Pop-Tart with some cheddar cheese on it? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'll have a Pop-Tart with some cheddar cheese on it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I don't necessarily think it made a Pop-Tart better or the cheese better, but it was totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to love it, right? Like, it's just my point is that it's not nasty.
Yeah.
The way it sounds like those two, like, sort of unconventional ingredients.
To be clear. I've been with you on this from the beginning.
Right. Yeah. You haven't been the naysayer.
That's fine.
Somebody here who will remain unnamed.
I will gladly be the food naysayer.
Who could say
it? Right. Who could say?
Yeah. I mainly because if I'm eating a Pop-Tart, it's not like I've already accepted I have no time to cook or make something good. Like I'm this is my life now.
Right.
I need to get this Pop-Tart right now, and I don't have time to slice thin cheddar and put it on there. I just got to eat it and go.
When did Patrick's life all start to go downhill? Well, this one night he had a Pop-Tart, and from then on there was just no turning back.
Right.
He couldn't do anything to turn his life around.
That's probably true.
We should have gotten Rick on here because he also had one of my.
He did.
He did try it. Yes.
Yeah, and he was a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It was not.
But it is not, it's not like, I wouldn't say it's better than a Pop-Tart.
Right. Mm. See, this is what it does to me. It justifies turning that Pop-Tart into a meal because I put protein on it.
Okay. Is there protein in cheese?
There's protein in cheese.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah.
I don't know.
Ask our vegan friends. I don't know if that works. Well, that
they don't eat cheese.
Ask our vegetarian friends then.
Yeah. Yeah, don't ask your vegan friends.
You want this?
That's a conversation you don't want to have.
Does this work for you?
Is there protein in cashew cheese?
We invited you to our home. We don't know what to cook for you, so here's a Pop-Tart with some cheese on it.
Does that work?
That's probably more repulsive to a vegan than like actually cooking them a steak.
Right. Probably.
So now I am curious though, like what other cheese Pop-Tart combinations do you want to try out?
I don't actually know what Pop-Tart flavors are out there.
Strawberry.
That's right, because you don't really eat Pop-Tarts.
Chocolate, blueberry.
I could see blueberry being good. Chocolate seems like it would be weird.
Yeah.
You know, maybe with a Havarti cheese. I like that. It's like silky smooth, you know, like so.
Like a brie.
A brie. I can see good. That. You know.
Yeah.
You know, the Swiss.
A goat cheese on the strawberry. That could be nice.
That could be good.
Yeah. Swiss is a little too powerful for me.
Yeah.
Like everything pungent. Tastes like Swiss when I eat Swiss. Yeah. So
even if like other cheeses are near the Swiss, everything starts to taste like Swiss.
I agree. All right. Well,
kind of like Switzerland. When the other countries are too close to Switzerland, they all start to feel like Switzerland.
I don't know what that means.
And so you look at our map and you're like, I don't know which one's Switzerland anymore because they all look like
that's
Switzerland.
That's just Europe in general. We've never known which is
I don't
which.
Know who's yeah. who. Yeah.
All right, I've got some news.
Tiny countries.
We're moving
so confusing.
On. We're moving on. Okay. So these are from 2021, last year.
Like a whole year ago.
A whole year ago. What are the most mispronounced words?
Of 2021?
Of 2021. These are relatively new words. That's why they're mispronounced.
Okay. So are we guessing?
No. I'm gonna spell it for you, and you're gonna try to pronounce it.
I'm gonna be good at this because I hadn't, you know.
All right.
Like to think that I'm good at this.
Here is our first word.
I'm ready.
C H E U G Y.
C H.
Can you use it in a sentence?
G Y. C H E U G Y.
Yeah.
Shoogie.
Shoogie.
Or chewy. Maybe it's just chewy.
Yeah, maybe
the G
chewy.
Is silent.
Chewy?
Yeah.
This is chuggy.
Chuggy?
Chuggy. This is a trendy term popularized by Gen Z, used to mock outdated, unfashionable aesthetic associated with millennials.
Wow.
Such as live, laugh, love signs.
Okay, well, those have never been cool.
Live, laugh, love is definitely Gen X and not millennial.
So we know this for a fact?
I'm confident.
Okay.
I'm Gen X. I ain't got this in my house.
I'm millennial. I don't got this in my house. Yeah. But I would agree that it's chuggy.
That's true.
So chuggy.
Chuggy. Chuggy. Chuggy. Chuggy.
Chuggy. Chuggy. Chuggy. Chuggy.
Okay.
It's like the sound that I make for a choo-choo train for my son. Chuggy. 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 Chuggy.
All right. Here's the next one.
It's very cool.
Okay. I'll tell you what this is from here, too, and as I spell it here.
Okay.
First, I'm going to spell it, and then I'll tell you.
Okay.
D-A-L-G-O-N-A. And this is a Korean treat made with melted sugar and baking soda, popularized in Netflix's Squid Game.
Oh.
Dalgona?
I would say, yeah, Dalgona or Dalgona.
It's actually
Dalgona.
Talgona.
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 The D is pronounced like a T.
T, yeah, okay, yeah.
Talgona.
Talgona.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Sure. Well, chuggy's also a made-up word, so right. by weird kids.
But at least it followed like English principles of pronunciation. Like you're giving me like English letters with Korean pronunciation. Right. Yeah, I'm gonna get that one wrong.
Don't even pretend like English has rules that make any kind of sense at all.
D's sound like D's,
except for when they don't.
Sure enough.
Or like a pterodactyl, which starts with a P. Yeah. So
it's a pterodactyl.
Patera.
Yes. All right. Here you go. D O G
dog.
E. You nailed it.
Doge.
D-O-G-E-C-O-I-N.
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin. Nailed it.
Yes,
yeah.
That is how it is pronounced. Not doggy coin.
Doggy coin. Woo, I want to make a lot of jokes. Okay, keep going.
Okay. This is cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Popularized by Elon Musk.
It's the new Bitcoin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what is a cryptocurrency?
No idea.
Nobody knows.
Yeah,
it's like a non-fungible token. Nobody knows what that is either. Yeah.
Or an NFT.
That's a non-fungible. It's a non-fungible
yeah.
Token.
Yeah.
I also don't know. What is it? What does it mean? I don't know.
It means non-fungible token.
Yeah. Well, what does that mean?
We don't know.
I don't know. What, yeah.
Is
it's worth something.
Is it Dogecoin worth money? They say it is. How do you spend it? Nobody knows.
Don't know.
Like I don't know.
Yeah. It's a mystery.
Yeah. All right.
Someday we'll stand at the gates of heaven, and God will reveal these things to us.
Okay.
Here's the meaning of non-fungible token.
All right, you want one or two more?
Two.
Two more. Two. Okay.
Because I'm feeling good now that I got Dogecoin.
Yeah. All right. E-I-L-I-S-H.
Eilish.
This is a singer.
Eilish, yeah.
Billy.
Eilish, yeah.
Eilish, yes.
Yeah.
Not Eilish.
Two for four?
Two for four. 50%.
Hey, that's a heck of a batting average right there.
Say, that's better than our odds ever are on any of these.
What do you think of Billie Eilish?
I have no opinion whatsoever.
That makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
This is the first time you may have heard of Billie Eilish.
You know
who she is? I knew that she was a singer, and I knew that her name was pronounced Eilish. I get credit for that, right?
Yeah.
She was recently on Saturday Night Live.
Recently, like a year ago.
Right.
No, like within the past couple of weeks.
Maybe, I don't know.
I just saw an ad for it the other night.
Yeah. What do you think?
I'm aware that she dyed her hair blonde recently.
Oh, okay.
It was green. Yeah. It's now blonde.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did it do that weird thing that sometimes happens when you have like blonde hair and you get into chlorine for too long and it's kind of like a fainted green? Is that what it's like now?
It was like lime green.
Oh.
And then she's gone like bombshell blonde.
Bombshell.
I don't know why I know as much about Billie Eilish's hair as I do.
I could not name
it. Could you name a song?
I've got some shame. Yes, Bad Guy by Billie Eilish.
There you go.
Okay. I could not have named a song.
I believe that. Nor me, but okay. I'm also.
Yeah.
I'm not a millennial, so, you know, like.
Is Billie Eilish a millennial?
No. Yeah. But you're closer to that generation than me.
Oh, okay.
I'm of the all new music is terrible phase.
Right.
So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I saw this shirt when I was in Disney World recently. It's like 6-year-old guy. So I may be old, but at least I got to see all the good bands.
Yeah.
I like that. That's the one. Yeah.
All right. Last one.
Mm-hmm.
Y-A-S-S-I-F-Y.
Y-A-S-F.
S-S.
S-S.
I-F-Y.
Yassify.
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 Yassify?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a word. This is like Chugi. What is this?
Is that like to make something
Yassify
like exciting or cool?
A popular trend in which multiple beauty filters are applied to well-known pictures or portraits for comic effect.
We're yassifying it.
Yassify. This is what the teens are doing. Yeah, let's yassify this.
This popular picture.
Yep. I don't know. How do they land on yassify? You know, kids are weird, right?
I don't.
Is that Chugi?
Probably.
I bet if I invited some Gen X kids into all of our homes.
We don't have any Gen X kids.
Well, I have plenty of Gen X kids I work with.
No, you're a Gen X kid.
Oh, Gen Z.
Y or Z.
Gen Z.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would find many things that they would say are chuggy in your house.
Probably, but with it,
But it's not a live, laugh, love sign.
Yeah. It's not. Take that.
Oh, no, those dumb teenagers say, okay, boomer to me. And I'm like, I'm not a boomer. You shut up. Like,
some teenagers.
You shut your mouth. How dare you?
I'm about as cool as it gets compared to you, right?
Right.
It's like... Losers. All right. There's our fun words mispronouncing 2021.
Right. Happy New Year.
It's so cool to drag teenagers.
2021 is so chuggy.
So chuggy.
No, yeah. Let's yassify.
I'm yassify 2021. Yeah.
Right. 2022.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We moved on. We're in the year 20. This is New Year. This is definitely not recorded before 2022.
Absolutely not.
All right, so this is the first Monday of the month, so we're going back to the Bible.
All right.
And we have a bit of an interesting discussion.
We need like a special theme song for Back in the Bible.
Because we're going to spend a few months in the Gospels.
Okay.
Okay. But we're going to talk about maybe one Gospel a little bit more in depth. This is what kind of themes or patterns that it has. And then take one aspect of Jesus' life and ministry and highlight that.
Boom.
Maybe because it's especially highlighted in this Gospel.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Yeah. In today's case, maybe not.
Right. We don't know.
No, we know. It's just not. It's
I don't know.
Okay, so we're going to start with Mark.
The earliest gospel.
Yeah, because this is the first one written.
The beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's how it starts.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's got the good succinct intro.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Yep.
Mostly, it's got the good succinct gospel.
Right.
Yeah, it's like,
it is the shortest gospel.
To the point.
Right.
16 chapters long.
Yep.
And just boom, 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 boom. And really, we got kind of like three parts, but part two is super short. So, so let's go. Let's just dive right into it. So, we have three parts. First part mostly takes place in Galilee.
Mm.
So, this would be, you know, the section where Jesus does the majority of his ministry, kind of wandering around Galilee doing stuff.
Yeah. It would be like modern day northern ish Israel.
Sure.
North of Jerusalem.
Okay.
Yeah. And, even in Mark, he'll sometimes deviate from Galilee. Like, it goes across the little sea there to the Decapolis and then comes back.
Yep.
So
the ten cities. Yes. Yep.
All right. So the first part of Jesus' ministry, according to Mark, all in Galilee. And the theme there is like, who is this Jesus? Oh, my gosh. Look at this. Look at this guy.
What?
Yeah. This seems pretty cool.
Yeah. Right. I love this Jesus. Then we have an on the way period where we're traveling from Galilee to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And the theme there is, who is this Jesus?
So, I see a transition happening.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's more of a question.
Right.
The first one was more of an exclamation point. Now we've got more of a question.
Uh-huh.
And then finally we get to Jerusalem and we focus in on the last week of Jesus' life, which takes about the back, maybe a little bit less than half, back 40% of Mark, and this is how Jesus becomes the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're transitioning, the answer to the who is this Jesus is revealed in the back half of Mark.
Yeah, I can't say this with certainty. I think John spends the most time in like the crucifixion and resurrection, but I think proportionately Mark might spend more time there.
Yeah. Well, John has like a ton of like monologues.
Right.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like that don't happen in the, so like in between the Last Supper and like Jesus is arrested, John's got so much going on there.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He's got a prayer. He's got a prayer for the disciples. He's got a prayer for the world. I mean, just so much. But we're talking about Mark. So,
right.
Yeah. All right. So part one of Mark, that's like Galilee. Who is this Jesus section?
Yeah.
We have a lot of stories in here.
Sure.
About Jesus's miracles and forgiveness.
Cool.
Woo.
Yeah. So that's also what we're going to focus on today.
Yeah.
The miracles of Jesus.
I love it.
So
before we do that, anything else we want to say about Mark?
Yeah, I'm going to go through.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were like jumping up.
No, we've moved on from Mark.
That we're sounded done. Like we were ready to go.
No, I'm going to hit all three of these parts a little more in depth.
I got you.
And then we're going to jump into it. Okay. Right. So this obviously is going to cause a pretty diverse response.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, this Jesus, pretty great.
Mm-hmm. A lot of other people.
This Jesus, kind of confused.
Right.
And then finally, this Jesus, anti.
Got to go.
Don't feel good about it.
Got to not go. Not interested in who this Jesus is. Usually those are the religious people.
Mm-hmm.
Are the people who have some sort of
religious leaders, not just
power.
Yeah.
In their community.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even if Jerusalem and the context of Rome, very little power.
Yeah.
But right here, you know, they're a big fish in a small pond, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. So and Jesus is disrupting the system.
Yep.
And so Jesus' miracles, everybody's usually on board with that, except when he's doing it on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
Or he's telling people their sins are forgiven.
Ooh.
Those are the two that are like,
no.
Ugh. Yeah. That's a fly in the ointment there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty shuggy statement.
Right,
yes.
Yeah.
Right. We should really yassify it.
Yes. All right. So part two, who is this Jesus? Mm-hmm. And this is Jesus going to directly ask this question to the disciples.
Yeah.
Who am I?
Who do you say I am?
Who do you say I am? There you go. And he's actually going to do this three times in this section. Like, we're going back to this question. Peter, typically, I think tradition suggests Mark and Peter were like kind of bros in a sense. Mm. This is how we get Mark is kind of like Peter's guy, getting a lot of stuff from Peter. This is what a tradition suggests. I'm not saying it's true or not. You're giving me like a little look.
I've not heard this particular tradition, so I'm listening to the story.
This is what the Bible Project
with
told me.
Skepticism.
I am listening with skepticism because, you know, I've never heard this before, so I'm skeptical. Right. Yeah.
Well, if Luke is Paul's dude,
mm-hmm.
Mark is more Peter's dude.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, Matthew is still more Peter-centric.
Yeah,
like really highlighting Peter as a central figure, like setting Peter up to be, you know, what we come to know Peter as like the center of the church. That, mm-hmm. that really happens in Matthew. So I'm just intrigued by this idea that Mark was Peter's guy.
Okay,
but I guess if you're thinking like Mark and Luke were both around in the post Jesus world when they're starting to establish these kind of factions, and you have one who's really on Paul's side and one who's really on Peter's side, I could see that. Yeah, Mark would be more on that. Yeah, I can see that.
Peter can have multiple guys.
Sure.
I think typically the idea is like Mark's source for a lot of the stuff is Peter.
Yeah,
is kind of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Peter was popular.
Yeah.
So
I would question that his source is actually Peter, but I hear where they're coming.
I think
from.
That's the tradition.
Yeah, I hear it.
Again, I don't know if you can say that. All right, but anyway, so Peter gets kind of some highlights right here. This who do you say I am? Because he's like, you are the Messiah.
Yeah.
We're getting it, but not the Messiah in the way you think you are, Jesus.
Right.
You're the Messiah in the way I think you should be.
Right.
And that means you are going to be a military king and leader. You're going to deliver us from the Romans.
Yep.
I'm on board.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And Jesus
got my sword.
Like, not it.
Yeah.
This is not the Messiah that I am.
Get behind me, Satan. Yeah.
You're not going to get this. It's not about fame. It's not about power. It's about sacrifice and ultimately about dying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And not only for Jesus, he says like, this is what it means for you too.
Yeah.
You're going to, what it means to be in the kingdom of God is to die. And that doesn't mean necessarily physical death, but to die to oneself.
Yep.
All right.
Though we are also going to die a physical death.
Yeah. Well, I mean, regardless of the Messiah, Jesus says we're going to die. You know?
Right.
All right. This culminates in the Transfiguration.
Yep.
And then we go Act 3.
Well, we're just blowing right past Transfiguration.
Great. What do you got for me?
I think we might say what it is. You know,
say what it is.
So the Transfiguration, Jesus is up on the mountain with three of his disciples in Mark's telling of it. I believe Peter, James, and John are there with him. And then while he's up there, he is transfigured before them. He changes into something different, and he's made to be like sparkling white. I think they say whiter than any clothes could be bleached, I think is the phrase that Mark uses. And then Moses and Elisha appear, and Jesus chats with Moses and Elijah, and the disciples kind of stand there dumbfounded. And then Moses and Elijah disappear, and Peter's like, wait, let's build some tents and let's just stay here. This seems like a good thing. And Jesus is like, nah, man, we got stuff to do. And so then he goes about his business. And from that point on, I think it's Mark's gospel. It might be Luke that says this, but at this point, Jesus sets his face towards Jerusalem. And so this is like his final kind of like pep talk word of encouragement of like, go do it.
Yeah.
Go make it happen.
Yeah.
And he goes and he does it.
Well, in Mark's gospel, this is the lead in to Jerusalem. Yeah. So we're going right into what we would call Holy Week for the church. So the final week of Jesus' life.
The week before Easter.
Well, the week before he gets crucified. Because we got a couple weeks after he's risen again.
Yeah. But, the final week of his life before he's crucified and raised. Yeah.
So we got Palm Sunday. He's going to come in triumphal entry.
Hosanna.
Yeah. Everybody waves their palm branches. They say, yay, Jesus.
Throw down your coats on the ground.
He's like, you know where I should need to go? Take me to the temple.
Yeah.
And let's clean house.
Yes.
Boom. Yes. Whip of cords. Yep. Turning over tables.
I love this part.
Yeah. And then
throw them out.
And then, you know what else I'm going to do on my checklist this week? Verbal confrontations with everybody.
Who won? You get a confrontation.
Jesus,
you get a confrontation.
Sassy.
Everybody gets a confrontation.
He is going to all the religious leaders and just let's just get it out there, wrecking them, coming in. And ultimately saying like, hey, the temple right here, it's going to be destroyed.
Yep.
Like the thing you love and you're like built your entire society and life around, it's gone.
Yep.
Deal with it. And they're like, no, we're going to destroy you. And he's like, you can try.
Like, I'm going to build it back in 3 days.
3 days coming back.
This temple took hundreds of years. Yeah, you don't get what I'm talking about. Right. But interestingly, because when we're talking about like Mark and when Mark is written, the debate is whether or not Mark was written just before the temple actually was destroyed or just after the temple actually was destroyed. Mm. This is an important piece of Mark's audience's awareness of that temple having been taken down. Yeah.
Interesting. Then we get into the Passover or the Last Supper,
mm-hmm.
Jesus' death on the cross, and where we have kind of the first person in Mark's gospel, aside from Jesus, that gets it. And it's the Roman soldier who
testifies.
That's what I would expect. Jesus is the Son of God.
Yeah.
Truly, this man is the Son of God. So this is the first person that we see in this gospel that puts all the pieces together and is able to say the statement that we've been kind of like itching to hear from the get-go. Because Mark opens with like, this is the beginning of the Son of God's ministry. This is the first guy that's like, whoa.
Yeah.
And this is pretty significant because the Roman soldier, not a follower of Jesus. Mm-mm. Not a Jewish person.
Probably somebody who helped in the act of crucifying Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
More than likely. Right. If by no other way than standing there when it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Boom. Here we have it. All these things happening. And so this is an intentional act of Mark by saying this is who's getting it.
Yeah.
Not the disciples, not the religious leader, not even the disciples, not the religious leaders. This outsider puts it all together.
Yeah.
And then Mark ends in the most interesting way. Because we have the women go to the tomb.
Yeah.
There's a guy there who says, Jesus is risen.
Cool.
And they're like, oh, this is so scary.
Yep.
The end.
they tell no one because they were afraid.
Yeah.
That's the original ending to Mark's gospel.
Yeah. Your Bible probably has an extended ending that's not...
Special features.
Director's cut. Yeah.
Well, that's not in the earliest manuscripts.
Yeah. So it was a later edition.
It could be Mark's. It could be another editor added it in there later. We're not quite sure. But this is Mark's, we can probably say the earliest versions of Mark, it ends with like...
They said nothing to anybody.
Angel says Jesus rises. They get afraid. Boom.
Yeah. And Jesus doesn't even appear in that particular
version.
That's
right. Yeah. What do we think about that ending?
About the ending?
Yeah.
They ran out of budget.
Came to the end of the scroll.
Paper's real expensive.
I'm like, yeah, you know.
It's been a long day. Right. It's fine. It's
the scroll shop is like 2 miles away. This is pretty good.
Right.
I mean, it does beg the question, right? If they said nothing to anyone, how did anyone find out about it?
Right.
And so, I mean, I think there's that piece. I think it's also, there's an element of this being written to a people who were probably facing some element of persecution and of living in fear.
Yeah.
And connecting that community who was hearing this gospel for the first time to the fear of the people who had been the first proclaimers. Because especially at that time, right, if you are a follower of Jesus in, let's say, 70 CE, so about 30 to 35 years after Jesus' death, you know the story, right? You may have met some of the women who were there. You have seen the disciples. You have been, like, you've had those stories told to you at this point. So you don't need to know what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Mark's point is ending with, they said nothing because they were afraid, and you're afraid, and that's okay. Like, you know, the people who were there who saw it happen were afraid. You can be afraid,
right,
but God is still with you. This thing is still true. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mark's gospel is begging the question, right? I think that's what it's powerful about it, because it's written to people who kind of already know the story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not unusual to hear this idea of, like, what? Jesus rose from the dead? Where did this come from? That was an early teaching of the church in Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, which comes out around the same time as Mark. He is clearly spelling out, we believe Jesus rose from the dead. Right. Like, this is not like an add-on.
Yeah.
Later to the fact. So, but I think it does beg the question of, like, you, the listener, the reader, what are you going to do with this? Are you like the disciples? Are you afraid like the women? Are you like the Roman soldier? You know, how do you respond to this?
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting kind of a thing, you know, begging the question of the listener and the reader, instead of just saying, like, and here's what Jesus's ministry was like after he rose from the dead. It really is saying, now it's on you. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty interesting ending.
Mm-hmm.
Every other gospel will spend much more time post-resurrection than Mark does.
Yeah, which is not a lot, but is much
but
more than Mark.
Yeah.
But there's at least something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus will make an appearance post-resurrection in the other three gospels, but not in Mark's.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I love Mark. It's, if you're looking for, like, a place to just get into the gospels, you can read Mark in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Like there are actually people who memorize Mark and put on Mark as, like, a piece of performance, right? Where they, like, do the whole thing from memory. And it takes, like, a 2.5 hour show or so to see it redone that way. So you can read it even faster than that. Mark is quick. It's to the point. Everything's happening right away. So that moves right along. Like, it's a good gospel to wet your palate, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would have to say Mark is the most readable of the four gospels.
Yeah.
And that it's just
quick and easy.
All killer, no filler. I mean, it's just boom, 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 boom.
But because of that, there's also a lot of stuff that if you are coming at it without a real deep understanding of the Old Testament, that you'll blow right past and will not be aware that it's happening.
Does it seem kind of disjointed to you when you read it? Like, just kind of like snapshots versus the interconnected story?
Sometimes. But I mean, there's still enough transitions that it feels like, oh, this is moving from here to here to here.
Right.
It's not like, here's a story, here's a story, here's a story. It's still told in, like, a linear fashion. Yeah.
Mark is like the 2-hour movie version of a 500-page book. So, I mean, like, in that you're getting the ideas of it. But if you read the book, you're going to get the greater world, the greater sense of the characters, the greater, you know, understanding of everything that's happening. So it's again, it's not necessarily a bad version of that.
Right.
It's just a very different version of that.
Yep.
So there you go. All right. So we want to talk a little about the miracles.
Let's do it.
So, one, why does Jesus do miracles?
Ooh. I personally go to John's gospel for this, but I'll let you all talk first.
Okay. Before you trump us with the Bible?
I'm not trumping. Because we're talking about Mark, it feels a little bit weird to pull John in to talk about miracles.
Right.
But for me, that's why it matters.
Well, I mean, you know, as probably the non-biblical scholar or least biblical scholar in this podcast, to me, it seems like they're always either to prove a point, or most of the time they're to prove a point or set up a parable, right?
Mm.
But also there are times when it seems to be just purely out of compassion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that interesting, that it's like job Jesus, where he's like got an agenda, and then civilian Jesus.
Yeah, I see that.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, honestly, that's if one of our teenagers asked me, why does Jesus do miracles? I would give a very similar answer.
Yeah.
That I think Jesus is doing miracles, one, to prove his divinity, two, to show us a world how it should be instead of the way it is. And finally, Jesus is really just loves people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he sees people in pain calling out for healing, and he's going to do the work that needs to get done. Like he will fix whatever, you know, whatever's broken, he's going to put back together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty powerful element of who Jesus is.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of like, those are my like, these are the three reasons why we have miracles in my mind. Pastor David, trump us.
No, I'm not looking to trump. So the question always comes to my mind when we say, like, oh, well, this is Jesus' divinity or whatever, you know, as you were putting it just then. right? There are points in the Gospels where we hear, well, Jesus couldn't do any miracles there, right? You know, because of the lack of faith of the people, Jesus couldn't do any miracles in his hometown, for instance. And so one of the things that has been helpful for me is to think about miracles the way that the Gospel of John talks about it. And that's by actually not calling them miracles at all, but calling them signs. Hmm. John doesn't use the word miracles. He uses the word sign. There are seven signs throughout John's Gospel. And at the end of the Gospel, John has this little kind of parenthetical statement, says, you know, this is not all of the works of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, but these are written down so that you might come to believe that Jesus Christ is Son of God, something or other. I don't remember exactly where it goes. But so if we think about it that way, right, what's the purpose of like a road sign even, right? It's not to attract us to that thing. If right. you see a stop sign, you're supposed to pay attention to the intersection in front of you. And so the signs that Jesus does perform are all pointing us back to the coming of the kingdom of God and whatever that looks like. And so it doesn't matter, you know, this person's healed, but this, you know, these hundreds of people over here weren't, or this area wasn't able to receive a miracle. The miracles that were received were there in order to draw those people into the kingdom of God and to point them to something greater than the event itself.
Yeah.
So often we get focused on the miracle. We think, wow, isn't that incredible that Jesus healed this blind person? What's incredible is that this is a way for us to know that God is coming into the world. Right. And so we get stuck looking for, well, you know, my cousin is blind. Why can't Jesus heal him the way that Jesus healed this blind person? Or my wife has cancer. Why can't Jesus heal her the way that Jesus healed these people? Right. And we forget that the purpose of Jesus's miracles was not just to bring healing into those people's lives, because everybody or all sorts of people were sick and in need that did not get healed by Jesus.
Sure.
The purpose of Jesus's miracles were to point us to God. And so even in the midst of an illness or a blindness, where are those places where something is breaking into our life to continue to point us back to God?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about, oh, I'm suddenly healed from something and doctors don't know how it happened. That could be a thing that points you back to God. But it could be, oh, I was able to have a relationship again with my estranged son or whatever because of this illness that happened. And, yeah. you know, that has drawn us back and has pointed me back to God's grace in my life or whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
There are any number of ways we can think about that. And those are all signs or miracles that are happening in our life every day as well. Yeah. And I think that's what Jesus' purpose is to point us back to God.
Yeah. And even though the Gospels are filled with miracles, if we think of Jesus' ministry as about 3 years, really he's averaging like a miracle every 6 weeks according to the Gospels. I mean,
yeah.
Like it's not like every day is like boom, miracle, boom, miracle, boom, miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have. We're just only getting, you know.
I mean, we do get places where it says he healed many in this town, and we just don't hear every story.
But,
right?
But the stories, we're not getting really that many stories compared to how many maybe there are, or in comparison to how many people could have used a miracle.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's probably everybody.
Sure.
So, all right. So let's take real quick here a favorite or interesting miracle, you know, that we'll go through here.
That's not my favorite.
Not your favorite, but an interesting one.
Very interesting.
What do you got? Hit us with it.
So I got, do you want me to like read it?
You give us a synopsis.
So I chose the coin in the fish's mouth,
ooh.
Mainly because I'd never heard about it before today.
Okay.
It's from Matthew.
Tell us about it. Yeah.
It's probably not one that gets a lot of Bible study play.
Right.
Or,
and, you know, I feel like there's not a lot there, but there's something there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's interesting.
So give us the synopsis. What happens
so
with the coin in the fish's mouth?
The synopsis is that they're in Capernaum, and the collectors of the temple tax ask Peter whether Jesus pays the tax. And he's kind of like, yes.
Maybe?
So they're asking for Jesus's tax returns.
Right,
got
right.
it. Okay.
So Peter goes back to Jesus and it's like, hey, they're asking for your taxes. And Jesus says, from whom do the kings of the earth collect duty and taxes? From their own children or from others? And Peter's like, others. And so Jesus says, then the children are exempt, but so that we may not cause offense, go to the lake and throw out your line. Take the first fish you catch, open its mouth, and you will find a 4-drachma coin. Take it and give it to them for my tax and yours. So Peter goes and he gets the fish and he pulls coins out of the fish's mouth and pays the tax.
Nailed it.
What?
Is it all? It's a really funny story.
I mean, come on. You all get it, right? It's... Yeah,
sure.
Everybody gets it.
So
that's
like
fine.
A,
we can just move on. We all get it. We don't need to talk about it anymore. It's self-explanatory.
Like a, I can do this thing, so I should do this thing.
Yeah. It does have a little bit of that vibe.
Right.
Yeah, especially Jesus. It really is saying, like, I don't need to pay no tax. Who are you taxing here? Not me.
Right.
It's like, but fine. I don't want to cause a scene.
Yeah.
Let's do some fishing.
Pull it out of thin air.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I guess here too, right? who is this pointing back to God would be my question, right? Who in the story is that for? And if Mark was Peter's guy, then this might be a story that Peter's like, hey, this one time, this really cool thing happened. Let me tell you about it.
Right.
And maybe that's a way that Peter was becoming aware of God or of Jesus's status as something like, oh, wow, this guy, you know, not only can he call me out of the, well, I guess that's in Matthew's gospel that he calls him out of the boat, but, you know, not only can he do all this other stuff, but he makes this thing happen where there's a fit or there's a coin in a fish's mouth all of a sudden. And, you know, I think in some elements, Jesus is saying, we're going to acknowledge the authority that these people have. We're not just going to ignore it, but also it's not real authority. Real authority is being able to say, I can get a coin out of the fish's mouth if I want to, right?
Right.
Or later on, we'll hear like, God could raise up stones from Abraham, right? We hear that from John the Baptist, right? That's real authority, is to be able to raise up ancestors of Abraham from stones, not just be able to say, Abraham's my ancestor.
It's sort of like staking claim as king of heaven and earth, right? Yeah. Because like literal creation is going to pay my freaking temple tax for me.
This fish is going to pay my tax. One fish, two fish, three fish.
It is a neat story.
Drachma fish. Yeah.
You think of all the miracles that Peter gets to see. This is probably pretty low on the list of like, wow, that was amazing. But like, it is like.
How awkward do you think he felt carrying just a fish up to the. He's like.
Open its mouth.
It's a fish rattle. He's thinking, this is going to go really poorly if there's nothing inside this fish.
Yeah.
I think he checked before he took. I think he just took the coin.
Did he?
I don't think he took the fish to the
I would love if he just dangles the fish. Like he's like a bully in like an old movie, like shaking a kid upside down. The coins fall
out. That's how I picture it. Yeah.
Like, booyah.
Right.
I like it. That's good.
Okay, so I love the miracles of Jesus. I think they're all really fun stories to teach from and to get into. So I have a lot of favorites, but my...
That's not how favorites work.
My absolute... I have a lot of favorites. Okay, I'm allowed to have a lot of favorites. My absolute favorite, though, comes from the Book of Mark.
Okay.
Okay, so Jesus goes to the Decapolis, the 10 cities,
crosses
this lake, and he gets there, and all of a sudden this dude shows up who's like... cut all up and he's crazed and he's got chains all wrapped around him and he's yelling and screaming and he is clearly got something going on.
Yep.
Like, and he's living in the tombs of this town, kind of like, you know, if every other person in this town, they know about this dude because he's the guy who lives in the tombs.
Right. Yeah.
And they try to chain him up every now and again and he breaks the chains.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, well, we tried. Like, and then probably they're like, hey, if you don't eat your broccoli, grave guy is coming for you. Yeah. Like, you know, like they're really, you know, he's this local legend.
Yeah.
You know, and he has this confrontation with Jesus, and Jesus is like talking to him, and finally it's revealed that this guy is possessed by not a demon, but a legion.
Yeah.
Or the legion is the name of the demon, which is so fascinating and interesting. And then we get to the matter at hand here. Jesus is going to cast this demon out, and the demon's like, please don't. Like, I'd rather not.
Pretty please.
And Jesus is like, okay.
What do you got for me?
And the demon's like, send me into the pigs. And she's like, fine. And sends the demon into the pigs. The pigs all commit suicide and jump off a cliff.
Yep.
And then the guy is healed. And that is so interesting. And then the town shows up and they see this guy. And this my favorite phrase in the whole story is they see this guy and it says, and they are afraid. That's my favorite sign. Because like they knew this guy as a guy who was like screaming in the tombs, could not be chained up, like this terror, this local legend. But when they see him in his right mind with Jesus, that's the scary part because it's so different than what they expect. And so I love this story. Now, do we get a reason why Jesus sends the demon into the pigs?
Nope.
No.
Yeah.
Do we get a reason why the pigs all commit suicide? No.
No.
We don't. And even like it ends on this really interesting thing where this guy's like, okay, Jesus, take me with you. And Jesus is like, no.
Yeah.
You're going to stay here and just tell people what I did.
Tell your story. Yeah.
And Jesus leaves. And interestingly enough, in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus comes back to the Decapolis a couple chapters later, and now 4,000 people want to hear him talk, presumably because of what this guy was saying.
Wow.
Because after this happens, they're like, Jesus, you got to get out of here. And Jesus like basically is on shore for like 20 minutes, it feels like. And he's like, all right. And just like takes off back.
Right.
I love this story. I think it's so interesting, so powerful. And it obviously raises the questions that I think we've talked about on the past, like, what do we make of demons here?
Yeah.
Is this a literal demon? Is this a figurative demon? Is this...
I mean, this demon ran a whole herd of pigs off a cliff.
Yeah.
That's...
And I'm sure theologians and us as readers have landed on a lot of different thoughts of like, what do we make of demons? Are they still out there here in the third world somewhere? are they still doing their thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and I don't think that's a, that's maybe a question for another day or a previous podcast. But I personally land on.
Well, let's assume it was for a previous podcast. So that way we don't have to come back to it in the right, future.
Yeah. I think we talked about
it. That's very handy.
Personally, I think they are literal.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean your neighbor's possessed by a demon.
Right.
Even when they're weird.
Yeah. I think they're literal. I don't think that they necessarily exist in the way that like we have cooked them up to exist, yeah. You know? But
one of the things that C.S. Lewis talks about in Screwtape Letters is that, you know, demons or evil or whatever have taken on many forms throughout history, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they work within the context of the world that we live in order to lure us away from God.
Right.
And so this is what worked at that time. Mm-hmm. What are they doing now? We can't deny the presence and power of spiritual forces. We can't just say like, oh no, that's third world stuff. Like, come on, that's just ridiculous to think that demons are attacking people in the third world, but not attacking you. It's insulting and all sorts of inappropriate stuff. So,
I think in communities with a higher sense of the spiritual,
mm-hmm.
they
mm-hmm.
might have a greater sense of the demonic forces around them. And so that seems like a third world kind of a thing.
Because
in the first world, we don't have the higher sense of the spiritual.
But just because we deny the spiritual does not mean that the spiritual is less present.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
Also, I saw this really funny cartoon. It was a Christmas cartoon. It was all these animals lined up around the manger, and there's like a donkey, and they're like, I'll carry him, you know, through the streets to hosannas, and the horse
Even
is going to do this thing.
There.
Yeah, the fish is there. I'll have a gold coin in my mouth, and then the pig at the end of the line is like, I'll be possessed by a demon and run off the white. What?
It's a real. I love this story. Cute. I think it's so interesting. It's out of all the demon possession stories in the Gospels, this is. By far away from me, it's got so much going on.
Yeah.
Like it's so cool to kind of read.
And again, right? It's all about pointing this guy and eventually these other 4,000 people back to God. Like we don't see that in the initial response. Yeah. So many of the other miracles are like, oh, and everybody's like amazed, but here everybody's terrified.
Yeah.
And it takes this guy telling his story to point people back to God.
Well, I think it also kind of suggests to us that the real miracle that can draw people in is a changed life.
Right.
Like that, that has more power than a momentary healing or cleansing of an illness or a disease. Like a changed life is the story people want to hear.
Yeah.
And I think that has a really powerful element here that the gospels kind of lay out for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's my turn.
It is.
All right. So mine is from the Gospel of John. It's the raising of Lazarus from
classic.
The dead. It is classic. I particularly love it because it's probably the longest like narrative piece, particularly around a healing, but just the longest narrative piece that we have in the Gospels of like a story from start to finish. That this is one story because we get all the way from the beginning. Lazarus is sick and Jesus hears about it. And then Jesus doesn't go right away. And then Jesus shows up. And then there's this whole conversation and dialogue that happens. Mm-hmm. And it's been these number of days and Jesus cries. And then people are like, oh, see how he loved him. And all this other stuff happens.
And the sister's like, if only you were here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Twice.
What
both sisters say it.
So long.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's just, it's a fabulous story. And it's all setting up the powerful story of the resurrection that's about to be, or the crucifixion and resurrection that's about to be taking place. So I really love the story of Lazarus, but we'll get into that more when we get to John's gospel in a couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Miracles of Jesus.
And Mark.
Miracles help point us to the signs of Jesus.
So they are the signs that point us to Jesus.
Well, if you've never experienced a miracle, we have experienced things that point us to Jesus.
Yeah. Yep. So you have experienced a miracle. Congratulations.
Oh, there you go.
If you've experienced something that points you to Jesus, you have experienced a miracle.
Okay, there you go. Huh. Interesting.
Change your perception.
Right.
2022 is our year.
Right. Wait, no.
It's my year.
Take 2022 away from Patrick.
Right.
Claim it as your own.
Well, Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Auld
Lang Syne and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you liked what you heard on today's episode, I guess your New Year's celebrations are over, so you can't gather everyone around on New Year's Eve and listen to this podcast. But
you're still celebrating Christmas.
Sure, so. Why not? For another couple days. Hey, you're right. We've got another couple days. We're on like day 7, I think, at this point. 8, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
We do know. I just can't do the math right now. Hey, enjoy Christmas all the way up until Epiphany on January 6th.
Sing your Christmas
and
songs.
And then do all that stuff.
Merry Christmas it up.
Enjoy
right
it all.
Now.
And send your friends to the Beyond Sunday Podcast website at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can leave us a rating or a review at Apple iTunes or Google Play or all the places and send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Nailed it.
Or send us food.
Yes. Sure, yeah.
Keep with the tradition.
That's right. Top fan status is up for grabs, currently held by Rich, who's the only one to send us food.
Yeah, so. maybe I need to talk more about foods I don't like.
Yeah.
You know what I hate?
chocolate chip cookies. Yeah.
Steak and baked potato. God, it was terrible. Right. Oh, fried chicken.
Yeah.
Anything DoorDash to me during this podcast.
Terrible. I hate that stuff.
The worst.
Yeah. Nothing's worse than having our podcast interrupted by DoorDash.
I hate gift cards to restaurants and stores. Ugh. The worst.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.